Thank you. Yes, the example, Mr. Chairman, you give is a good one. It could be the National Bank is lending money to a lessor, which is part of a banking organization, which then leases the rolling stock to an individual operator. And you would hope that both of those transactions create international interests. They should do, depending on where the ultimate operator is based, because obviously the international interest only arises when the debtor is in a state which has ratified the protocol. So you could envisage a situation where, let's say, Russia has ratified the protocol, the National Bank has lent money to an operating bank in Russia under a secured financing system. That would create an international interest. But the commercial bank now leases the rolling stock to a company which has its head office in Kazakhstan, which has not ratified the protocol yet. And therefore, there is a potential issue. But for the creditor of the commercial bank, it would want to be sure that the rolling stock is maintained correctly and that the Orvis marking is maintained correctly, because that will be the security that it needs, because it will be registering its international interest, and it will need the Orvis number to be attached to the rolling stock, even if the sublessee, or the lessee in this case, even if the operator in Kazakhstan is not itself bound by the Luxembourg Protocol. So I know it's a little bit complicated, and hopefully in the end, everybody's ratified the protocol and then it doesn't matter. But this is one case where you would see it's important for the National Bank as the creditor at the top of the system to ensure that the operator at the bottom of that chain is actually applying the rules, even if the protocol is not actually in force in the state where the operator has its principal place of business. So it's all a question of security. It's all a question of how the creditor providing secured credit under the Luxembourg Protocol, taking that international interest, registering that interest, he has to be sure that wherever that rolling stock is, even if it is not in the possession of his debtor, that it will be maintained correctly in accordance with the provisions under the model rules. And I would suggest that's reasonable. That's what a creditor would expect to happen, just like he will expect, for example, the rolling stock to be maintained correctly, regardless of whether his debtor is actually the physical custodian of the rolling stock. If he is not, he will impose on the party to whom he has given that physical possession an obligation to maintain the rolling stock correctly. And so this is very consistent with that approach. It just says for rolling stock, which is being operated by someone who's not the debtor, then the debtor has to make sure that the rolling stock is properly looked after. And this is just part of the looking after of the rolling stock.